A reading from Colossians. May you be made strong with all the strength that comes from his glorious power, and may you be prepared to endure everything with patience, while joyfully giving thanks to the Father, who has enabled you to share in the inheritance of the saints in the light. He has rescued us from the power of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For in him all things in heaven and on earth were created, things visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or powers. All things have been created through him and for him. He himself is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so that he might come to have first place in everything. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, by making peace through the blood of his cross. The word of the Lord.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. So here we are almost at Thanksgiving. Every year, I'm always surprised at how we put our heads down in September. And, you know, it's just like instantaneous almost. It feels like we look up and Thanksgiving is here. I mean, this year, I feel like I just moved to Charlottesville and all of a sudden it's Thanksgiving. I don't know about you. Maybe it's felt like the longest semester of your life, the longest period of your life, but it's felt very short to me. And but it's good that Thanksgiving is here because I love Thanksgiving. I come from a minister's family, so Christmas was a working holiday for my parents, especially for my dad. So he was, presents maybe took a back seat, unfortunately. So Thanksgiving was the time where we actually did get together, get to spend some time, really quality family time. We weren't a football watching family, but we did watch a lot of horror movies. And it's a strange Thanksgiving thing, but beyond the sentimental value of Thanksgiving for me, I think it's a beautiful thing. One of my favorite parts of being American, that we have a holiday centered around the idea of gratitude. Gratitude, you know, the Roman philosopher Cicero, who lived about 100 years before Jesus, he said that gratitude is the mother of all virtues. Gratitude is the mother of all virtues, meaning that a grateful person is a generous person, and a compassionate person is a patient person, a kind person, and a serving person. But I think more than that, I think gratitude is almost synonymous with happiness. Happiness to me can be like a very vague, abstract thing. It can mean pleasure. It can mean self-fulfillment. But if you get down to it, the times in your life when you've been most grateful are probably the times when you've been most alive in the present moment and most happy. So gratitude being something that is close to happiness and therefore something that I think all of us could use a little bit more of. You know, it's great that we have this holiday of Thanksgiving, but what's the caricature of Thanksgiving? That although it's got this artifice of gratitude and thanksgivingness, it is, in fact, a time that often represents the opposite for people. It is a sort of bonanza of passive aggression and obligation and suppressed family dynamics coming to the fore. You know, if you're dating someone, you know that it's a rite of passage that you have to go spend Thanksgiving with their family and try to figure out where to not step on the emotional mines and not put your foot in it too much. It's something you have to survive. At least that was the case for some people that I know. Thanksgiving, though, for a lot of folks, sometimes we do have those Thanksgivings that are perfectly restful and beautiful and very present tense, a lot of times we have Thanksgivings where what we really are thinking about are the people that aren't there, the people that have moved away, the people that refuse to come home, and the dynamics that you'd really rather not face. And I think that that's a pale reflection of the human condition. I don't think human beings are wired for gratitude. I don't know about you. My experience with beautiful women is somewhat limited outside of my wife. But The beautiful women I know look in the mirror and don't see beauty. They see the one zit or the blemish that they wish wasn't there. The men that I know hear feedback from their job. And there may be 10 positive things, but they only hear the one negative thing. For some reason, the human heart is fixated, obsessed with what it doesn't have, with what it lacks, with the holes and the problems. And that's what we wake up thinking about, and many of us go to sleep at night thinking about. We are not hardwired for gratitude. So tonight, I'm just going to speak briefly about what it is that replaces gratitude. What sin replaces love is the classic question. But what are the obstacles to gratitude in our lives? And secondly, how do ungrateful people become grateful people, aka happy people? How do we experience any shot at happiness in our lives? Now, one thing I'm grateful for today is that, fortunately, it's a passage that talks a lot about thanks, about gratitude. St. Paul writes, "May you be prepared to endure everything with patience, joyfully giving thanks to the Father, who has enabled you to share in the inheritance of the saints in the light." Joyfully giving thanks to the Father. Okay, the obstacles here. And this is I think there are two that I'm going to talk about tonight. And the first one is greed. Greed has been cartooned as a sort of extreme thing. It's kind of an Uncle Scrooge type of thing. Like that I not only want what I have, I want everything that you have and everything that this person have. And I want it all and I'm not going to let anything go. No, but that is greed, of course. But greed is far more innocuous. Greed is simply, I want more than what I have. I want to be more than who I am. Dissatisfaction with your present tense. And as a result, greedy people live in the future. Everything becomes, I'll be happy when I reach this stage in my life. Your every life becomes a series of stepping stones geared toward a future that we all know is a complete dead end, because you never actually get to that place. Culturally, we tend to bless this kind of greed with the word ambition. And I'm not saying that people don't need to be trained for jobs or have aspirations to do interesting things. But what I am saying is that the wanting more, needing more to be enough is a fool's errand. There's a new study that came out this week. The New York Times publicized it. It was actually everywhere. From Harvard, about wandering minds. Have you heard about this? It's kind of a silly term for a very basic thing. They write, a human mind is a wandering mind, and a wandering mind is an unhappy mind. The ability to think about what is not happening is a cognitive achievement that comes at an emotional cost. The ability to think about what is not happening is a cognitive achievement that comes at an emotional cost. In other words, the human propensity for living anywhere but the present is actually an indicator of unhappiness and pain and hurt in people's lives. Our ability to project onto the future and be afraid and anxious about things that probably will never happen is actually part and parcel of why we are so ungrateful and unhappy. The second obstacle I want to talk about, and this is the one that I think I suffer from the most, is self-pity. Do you know anyone who's self-pitying? Who thinks that the world owes them a thanks? And that they're constantly hung up on some credit or reward that they don't feel they've gotten? A lot of times in relationships, there's one person who always feels like they're failing, and there's one person who always feels like the other person is failing. It's called codependency. And that's what a self-pitying person is, the one who is the woe is me. I'm the martyr. If you could be more like me, our life would get better. But the self-pitying person also lives in the past. The self-pitying person, say that five times fast, nurses grudges, keeps accounts, is very judgmental. I mean, do you know anyone in your life that you feel like you're always failing? That no matter what you do, it's never good enough? Well, then you probably know someone who is consumed with self-pity. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't genuine things, genuine reasons, justifiable reasons to feel undone and you know, encumbered by life. But what I am saying is that self-pity is self-defeating. You know, the New Testament is filled with people that have been victims for so long that they've fallen in love with their identity as victims. Jesus heals a paralytic at the pool of Bethesda or Bethsaida or one of the Beths. And he says, "Do you want to get well?" And he says, he gives him this spiel about how no one wants to help him. But that's a man who's fallen in love with his idea of being a victim. He's gotten an identity from it. Maybe you know someone like that. Maybe you are someone like that. Self-pity will reduce you to nothing. It does alienate people. Trust me. If people always feel like they're failing you, they're going to stop inviting you to Thanksgiving, or they're going to stop attending Thanksgiving. So to the extent that you feel you don't have the things that you feel like you deserve, you will either be self-pitying, or worse, you'll become a bitter, hateful person. And to the extent that you have things that you feel you don't deserve, you will become grateful. Now, you'll notice that these two obstacles run on what we talk about here as the law. One runs on the concept of enoughness. Greed is you are bound up with being enough, enoughness. Self-pity runs on this idea of deservedness. Both enoughness and deservedness create lives that are fueled by, or that are completely centered around reward and achievement and earning. And they're dead ends. I wish they weren't, but they are. When the cliche goes, happiness is not having what you want, it's wanting what you have. That's actually true. Deservedness, enoughness, are categorically opposed to this form of gratitude that I'm talking about. So how does an entitled, or how does a self-pitying person become a grateful person? How does a greedy person, an ambitious person, a bitter person become grateful? Well, I'll tell you how not to become grateful, to be told to be grateful. You know, if you've been either a parent to a child or you've been a child yourself, you know that when you're told to be thankful for something, you are no longer thankful for that thing. Or a begrudging thanks is not thanks at all. Can I get an amen? I mean, like, when St. Paul says joyfully giving thanks, that's redundant. Thanks is joyful. Any thanks, any gratitude that is leveraged or sort of bargained is not gratitude. And it's, or at least it's not the kind you want. Just get married and you'll see. Secondly, gratitude is not a matter of just having more things to be grateful for. I wish that were the case. But we all know that the people who have the most materially tend to be the least grateful. I worked as a youth minister with boarding school kids in the Northeast for 5 years, and I loved them to death. Sam Bush. But they are entitled. And isn't it ironic that America is the only country that has this holiday around the idea of gratitude, yet anywhere you go in the world, Americans are viewed as entitled, as ungrateful, as difficult and obnoxious and loud and unaware of their surroundings. Now that you can argue with that, whether or not that's true, it sort of is, but this sense of entitlement tells us that having more does not mean that you'll be more grateful. In fact, the people that seem to have the least are the most grateful. Maybe you saw the movie The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, 2008. It's a French film, or it was made by an American in French. And one of the actors is Swedish, speaking French the whole time. It's a great movie. You need to sort of get through the first 30 minutes and you'll love it. What it's about a guy named Jean-Dominique Bobby, this is a true story. He was the editor-in-chief of Elle magazine, which means that he had reached the pinnacle of the Parisian fashion world. And he was very debonair, very dashing. He had women at his beck and call constantly. He was praised. And then in 1995, while driving his children home, he had a severe stroke and ended up with something called locked-in syndrome, where he could not control any of his appendages. In fact, the only thing he could control in his whole body was his left eyelid. And of course, you follow him through the stages of bitterness and anger and despair. And what you find is that he's taught to, speak through blinking. They devise an alphabet. You know, this means, you know, I'm going to read these letters to you. You blink when you get to the letter you want. He writes an entire book called The Diving Bell and the Butterfly that way. It is an amazing story. But what you find is a man who is entitled becomes grateful by being reduced to nothing. And he doesn't just become grateful of his children and the women in his life and the people taking care of him. He becomes grateful for being able to say a word, for being able to express himself, to have another day. And it's complicated. You know, it's a work of art, so it can't be reduced this much. But watch it. That is how an ungrateful person becomes grateful. And, you know, if you don't want to go that sort of a little bit more artsy-fartsy direction, just watch Harry Potter. The kid is put through so much grief in order to become a loving, self-sacrificing person that he does become. But his grief, starting with the death of his parents, continued through the death of his godfather, which he almost engineers, through people dying left and right, that is what shapes him into a grateful person, a person that is so generous that you know what happens. Okay. So, we must be disabused of this deservedness thing and this enoughness thing. We need to, suffering and these tragedies, unfortunately, will force a person to see life as a gift rather than a reward or a project. Life is no longer about figuring it out, getting the right answer to what you need to do with your life. Life actually becomes an experience and a gift, and a joyful one at that, full of thanksgiving, not devoid of suffering. But secondly, contrition and humility are not the only things you need to become this sort of grateful, happy person. Something else has to happen. Something big. Gratitude doesn't happen in a vacuum, does it? Gratitude is a response. You're grateful for someone, or you're grateful to something, or vice versa. Gratitude is not self-generated. It is always a response. The passage that we read here, St. Paul talks about Christians being grateful for an inheritance. Now, that's a beautiful image. An inheritance is a gift of what someone else has done, given to you, not because of anything you've done, but because of who you are. An inheritance is a gracious thing. Although, you know, maybe you're caught up in an inheritance battle right now and don't want to hear that. But an inheritance, in theory, is a grateful, gracious thing. And the Christian religion is not only a religion of grace, it is a religion of gratitude. All life is lived as a response to this grace. Mark Galley of Christianity Today wrote this. He said, only unconditional grace can transform a hardened heart into a grateful heart. Only a free gift can sabotage any notion of the quid pro quo. Only an utterly merciful act of love can fashion a new creation capable of love. Now, the merciful act here, as outlined by St. Paul, is that we are people who have been rescued from darkness and transferred into a kingdom of light. And the mechanic of that transfer, that mechanic of that redemption, is the forgiveness of sins. The forgiveness of sins. Now, we all know, just go back to the Scrooge story. A forgiven person is a grateful person. Scrooge, when he is sort of confronted with the consequences of how he's been acting and his greed and his self-pity and his self-centeredness, and he's given a second chance, he actually becomes spontaneously generous, spontaneously loving, funny, silly, all sorts of, and repentant. All the kind of things that we might associate with a happy person is what Scrooge, a person who's been forgiven, displays. So forgiven people are grateful people and forgiven through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. This is the heart of our faith. And this is why we preach this message every single week at Christ Church. We just don't believe that telling you to be grateful will give you what it takes to be grateful. And we don't believe that telling you how to be grateful is helpful either. If you need to be told how to be grateful, you're not grateful. All we can do is announce over and over again the beautiful, profound truth of a God who was reduced to nothing so that you can be grateful for everything. Grateful people don't suffer in the same way that self-pitying or bitter people suffer. There is a lightness to life's trials. But let me say this. The forgiveness of sins is a perpetual thing. This Thanksgiving, as you're sitting around that table, dealing with your own greed, your own ambition, your own self-pity, your own all the ways that this idea of deservedness and enoughness tyrannize your inner life and the way you treat other people, you are forgiven for that too. You are forgiven even for your ingratitude. And that is the good news of the gospel. Happy Thanksgiving.